Hello, and welcome to Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I'm Maddie Lubchansky.
And I am Clayton Ashley.
This week, it is episode 5 of season 1 of Enterprise, Unexpected, and the week of October 17th, 2001. There's actually kind of a weirdly... Sorry, there's the noise of kittens. Kind of a quiet week in America this time of year, weirdly. I mean, we are a couple weeks into the invasion of Afghanistan, which I think we forgot to mention.
A couple weeks?
A couple episodes ago. At this point, we are doing that. We've got a base in Uzbekistan, America does. So the war going awesome and good and... looking like it's going to be pretty short.
Sorry, do we already have that base, or we already built it?
We built it in October 2001. We asked Uzbekistan if we could build a base there, and they said sure.
Wow.
So that was this week.
Real-time strategy shit.
Yeah. We're constructing more pylons to defeat all terrorism for all time in a war that's looking like it'll last about a month or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, real clear objective. They're just going to go in, get that done, and this should be it.
I think that's correct. other things going on right now. October 15th of 2001 is when... So the anthrax stuff is still going on. That's when Tom Daschle in the Senate, the Democrat, received an anthrax letter, which was a huge deal because it made it to the government. So everyone's still freaking out about that. The Commerce Department announced that retail was the worst drop in nearly a decade. Like, people are afraid to leave their houses.
Oh, right.
And Polaroid has filed for bankruptcy, which is, I don't know, just feels like a real end of an era kind of thing. It's like the end of film as a thing.
But doesn't it, it gets bought or comes back?
Polaroid still exists, but yeah, it has filed for bankruptcy.
Okay.
Sort of like, I feel like that era of... the way we absorb or, you know, document our lives is changing deeply at the time.
So this reminds me of something I guess I was not aware of, is when exactly did the dot-com bubble burst? Has it yet?
The first dot-com bubble burst, I believe, in 98 or 99.
But the real... I thought, like, there was the big one that kind of...
Maybe
caused
that was...
a...
Clayton? That's a great question.
Caused an actual, like, downturn in the economy Clinton, I thought.
That was March 10th, 2000 was when that really burst.
I thought it kind of happened before 9-11, and 9-11 wasn't the actual, like, reason the economy was kind of, like, not super.
Yeah, so, like, it was that was already not doing great. I know there was like, a recession coming on anyways, and I think 9-11, which we haven't talked about yet, and we'll never talk about, I think put a dent in, like, people going out and buying stuff, because everyone was like, if you were John Q. Trucker, the enjoyer of Star Trek Enterprise, who lives in Ames, Iowa, or wherever.
He was in the Centralia, Kansas, or something.
Centralia, Kansas, you're right. If you're afraid to go to the Centralia Mall because one of the Taliban is there. And that was so, like, as goes the Centralia, Kansas sharper image, so went the nation.
And do you think there was a bit of a, like, I don't know, really projecting a thought experiment here about how conservatives, realizing they had so focused on a service and shopping economy, that the second it was scary to go outside and shop, well, they're like, oh no, wait a minute, actually, Bush is like, he said it's okay to shop yet?
I remember him being like, going on the TV and being like, you gotta shop. If you don't shop, we're in trouble.
We don't do anything else, right? Like, it's our economy.
Yeah, we accidentally turned the entire economy into shopping. So that's going on right now. what else is going on? Let's see. Mamma Mia has begun its Broadway run.
To get
a feeling of what culture was doing elsewhere. The sort of, like, soaring highs of the ABBA musical beginning its American Broadway run.
Interesting.
You ever seen Mamma Mia, Clayton?
I've seen the movie.
You've seen the movie. Have you seen the second movie?
No.
Okay.
I'm ashamed to say.
It's okay. the second movie is not very good because they used all the good ABBA songs in the
first movie.
Yeah. So they kind of, like, reprise a couple. They did say Fernando for the second movie, and it's Alfred Molina playing the titular Fernando.
Ooh.
And they do sing Fernando about him.
Interesting. Okay, yeah.
This is kind of outside the purview of the podcast, but I don't care. Mm-hmm. Because I'm fascinated by it. The Mamma Mia movie, because everybody's drunk.
Oh, yeah.
Like, including the cameraman. Like, everybody's drunk on set. Like, they all just went on vacation. And they're just drunk. And they're dancing around drunk. And they're singing drunk.
It does have that energy, I guess.
There's
thinking
an after,
about it now.
Yeah, there's an after credits scene where Donna and the Dynamos, the band, that Meryl Streep and Christine Baranski and a third actress who... I don't know her name.
Uh-huh.
Their band does Dancing Queen, I believe, at the end. I can't remember what song they do, but they do a song, and Meryl Streep starts yelling at the camera, and then they all start dancing around, and then Colin Firth and Skarsgård and Pierce Brosnan come back out, and the six of them are dancing around, and it is like, you were the six drunkest people I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, they all look like they're about to get in a car accident. It's incredible, and I don't understand why that's in the movie.
Because it's all they had.
Yeah. A question for you and also the listener.
Oh.
In the Mamma Mia universe, does the band ABBA exist?
An age-old question.
So, like, yeah, because the first thought is, right, it's a musical. So these people are just singing their heart's song, mm-hmm. right? Like, they're just whatever. So it just happens to be, to our eyes, the watchers, you know, they're the music that happens to be ABBA. But to which I counter, there's a scene where they're singing, I believe in the musical portion, they're singing Dancing Queen. What's her name? Siegfried. Mm-hmm. Amanda Siegfried and her friends are singing Dancing Queen. And in that sequence, they all pick up hairbrushes and start singing into them like they are microphones, which is a thing you and your friends do to a song that exists.
That's a strong argument. I hadn't even... At first, I thought there was, like... It was yeah, like you said, clearly, obviously, a musical in the sense of it's fictionalized, but...
None of the music is diegetic.
Diegetic, right.
None.
But...
Yeah.
So but I do wonder if they're taking... What if the way that music is used is really to give the characters a way to express what they needed to say because saying it is not enough?
That's right. I mean, that's all musicals.
But that's... Also why apparently Lady Gaga thinks Joker 2 is not a musical.
Yeah, Lady Gaga said that. And also, I keep wanting to say Todd Haynes, but it's not Todd Haynes. It's the worst Todd of film, Todd Phillips.
The bad Todd.
There's like three Todds
You're
of
right,
film.
Actually. There,
there's
yeah.
Haynes, there's Phillips, and there's Mr. Tar. What's his name? Todd Field. Sorry, Jesus. The three Todds of film.
Mm-hmm.
Todd Phillips ranks dead last with a bullet.
Oh, yeah.
But Todd Phillips also said it's not a musical, it's just people expressing it. So this is clearly talking points that they figured out.
I know.
But like, we can't listen. There is a guy, the son of John Q. Truck of Centralia, Kansas, John Q. Truck Jr.
Okay.
Who's driving around Centralia right now outside the dead mall with the closed Sharper Image. And he's got a Deadpool sticker on his car. And he loved Joker, the film Joker.
He loved it. It was for him.
He thinks the Clown Prince of Crime is so cool. And it's so actually very twisted. And it's not a comic book movie because it's like it takes it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's like so scary that there's a guy who thinks crime is funny.
Mm-hmm.
That guy cannot know it's a musical because that's gay. is gay to sing your feelings. Is gay to have a musical, but to feel your feelings so deeply that you sing them
was the definition of being
that's,
quote unquote.
That's
gay.
The straightest thing you can do.
I'm confused here.
Yeah, musical's gay.
Okay.
But feeling your feelings so much in the fiction of the thing someone is watching that everyone starts singing and dancing. That's normal and not a musical.
That's normal and straight and definitely not
that,
gay. Okay,
that's just
I'm clear.
That's just feelings.
Just feelings.
Gay and potentially Jewish. So that's Mamma Mia. Like I said,
go again.
Yeah, the other big news item is that the Enron scandal has begun to break at this point.
Oh, exciting.
Which was, you know, I was like refreshing my memory.
Speaking of things we did to the economy for real.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, like... You know, you could go listen. There's probably 45 podcasts just about the Enron scandal, but you know, it was a big energy company. They committed a bunch of tax fraud,
but also did terrible thing to people. I thought, like in terms of like fucking with their electricity or not being reliable at all.
Yes, it was bad news.
The fraud got so bad that they would like blame customers for the problems they were causing. See, here's the thing. I basically what I've learned from any time I learn a new fact about it is it always is worse than you think. This is one of those scandals that is actually more corrupt than you assume.
Yeah. I love also just, there's an incredible bit here. I remembered that there's a bit of their Wikipedia page called Jedi and Chewco.
What?
Like Chewbacca. In 1993, Enron established a joint venture in energy investments with CalPERS, the California State Pension Fund, called the Joint Energy Development Investments, JEDI. Anyways, that was part of the big scandal, was that their dealings with JEDI and Chewco.
And people's retirement funds.
And people's retirement funds. But it was just like, they just had like everything. They just had their hands in like every possible pot. But that was, you know, that was just a humongous publicly traded company going down. That was like a big spider web of a bunch of shit to make the economy horrible for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Then things got better later forever. And there was never...
They fixed it.
In 2001, they fixed the economy forever by giving everybody a house.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get to that, I guess.
I don't think Enterprise reaches the housing crisis. Mm. They're long canceled by the time...
Yeah, this is the build-up for it. I guess I was thinking more of the tax cuts.
Oh, yeah.
What we did to fix the economy.
Sure. Yeah. That's right. So in the world of music, not a huge change. I'm Real by J-Lo
still
has reached the top of the charts.
Right, yeah.
After being number two, replacing Fallen, of course, now Falling.
It's finally happened.
That's right. A big arrival is Izzo, parentheses H-O-V-A, by Jay-Z, has arrived on the charts. Just huge news. Lower down, but not as high up, but important culturally, in a chilling portent of things to come. Alien Ant Farm's Smooth Criminal cover and Nickelback's How You Remind Me are sort of like sneaking around. The sort of like new metal century has begun.
So this is one I heard, I know about, because my eighth grade history teacher, who was also my like homeroom teacher for all 3 years of middle school, had the radio on during like quiet reading, do your homework time. And this came on, I swear to God,
Alien
every
Farm.
Day.
Alien Ant Farm.
This song.
Yeah. The Smooth Criminal cover.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was inescapable for like a couple of months, as was the Nickelback song. But just some real sort of like the product of a completely cached culture, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we're out of stuff. It's like, we just got, there's like a guy with a, you know, 75 string bass and jeans the size of a circus tent, and he's here to play an old Michael Jackson song in a way that is worse. You know, like, I think Alien Ant Farm is like on the more listenable end of this era of music.
I don't know about that. I guess I'm not familiar enough with the rest of their
they at least were
oeuvre.
Had some creative shit going on. Nickelback, obviously, is Nickelback.
Yes.
But this is when they begin their terrifying reign.
Yeah.
As Nickelback, the band we all know and love, that terrorized America. Michelle Branch coming up with Everywhere.
Oh, nice.
Some great stuff. So, like, we're not... Bubba Sparks is here. It's bad news. The music charts are starting to become like the bad in the way that the late 90s were bad into becoming bad in the way that the early 2000s were bad.
Oh, yeah. The shift is happening. They didn't have a word for it yet.
The vibe is shifting. We're still dealing with music that was recorded pre 9/11.
Right.
So like things aren't really truly bad yet. Other cultural products. In theaters, Serendipity was new last week.
Ooh.
The romantic comedy that makes you go to the bad dessert place in Manhattan.
Oh,
to get the very expensive cold hot chocolate or whatever. It's the sort of restaurant where you can get like a sundae covered in like flakes of gold for $1,000.
Oh,
and they made a movie out of the restaurant, which is pretty stupid.
So it's weird to think that because it's such a thing still. In the last decade, even of New York City and decade before that, when the internet drove these kind of like meme restaurants.
Uh-huh.
But it's weird to think that they would make movies about New York because it was the big city.
It was the big city. And there was like, I don't know how many serendipities there were when they made the film Serendipity.
Sure.
But by the time that I moved to Manhattan in 2008, there was like 7 serendipities at that point. And they were like, it was like Serendipity 1, 2, 3, etc. Probably the most exciting thing, the only like non-cursed cultural item I could find, is that we are in the second week of Mulholland Drive being in theaters.
Neat.
David Lynch's fucking masterpiece, in my opinion.
So yeah, I remembered seeing that in when I was looking through some of the top things, and I'm like, wow, yeah. I can't believe this is top. And it was like, oh, if you limit it literally to like this one day, and it was like weighing it against how many theaters it was in, it's like it was nowhere near the top.
Yeah, like it is number 15 in theaters this week with a gross of $822,000, which is up 976% from its previous week's gross.
Does it say how many theaters it was in?
It was currently in 66 theaters, so yeah, not wide.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Poor thing.
I don't know when it gets wide. Still kicking around, our friend. Oh, Corky Romano is its first week here. We talked about it last week, but I think we...
Oh, I jumped the gun.
We might have jumped the gun on Corky, but it's okay. The Princess Diary is still kicking around. American Pie 2. My favorite movie, Rat Race.
Oh, yes. I liked Rat Race.
Yeah, Rat Race, good. I think history will be kind to the film Rat Race. We are somehow in the 22nd week of Moulin Rouge being in theaters, which is crazy.
I also did open a latch on real quick. You said Princess Diaries. Is that like the Disney?
Not, what am yes. I thinking of? Yeah, the Anne Hathaway.
Where
is turns it, out she's a princess.
Yes. Okay. My sister loved that movie.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's got Julie Andrews in it also, as like the queen of whatever the fuck country.
Right. Nope, right.
Maybe she runs the castle. I can't remember. I've seen that movie and the sequel. They're pretty good. Pretty good. So that's that. That's movies and then TV. Nothing fancy. Friends, The West Wing, ER, Law and Order.
Oh, boy.
Everybody loves Raymond.
Now we're getting to the real... Try not to go into, like, I'm editing these episodes and reliving them.
Yeah.
But just the idea that they made that non-canonical 9/11 episode.
It's so funny.
It's...
Still, there's some... This is... you really start to see the beginnings of weird reality television, actually.
Ooh.
Number 28 in the television rankings is The Weakest Link.
Okay,
the adaptation of the British show, and then something called Surviving Gilligan.
Now, hold on. The Weakest Link was the one with the mean host,
yes.
Right? She would insult people.
Yeah.
I feel like that was on Sundays, and we would catch that at the grandparents after supper.
Yes, I'm sorry. Surviving Gilligan was, I'm confusing with something else, was a documentary.
Okay. a little...
Sorry. But like, you know, I feel like The Weakest Link and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and all these things were like the beginning of...
Yeah.
We were, like, there were game shows, obviously, but they were like something more.
Something
you know?
Almost to like, not scheduled viewing, destiny...
yeah, like appointment television.
Appointment television, because we did watch Millionaire, and then I think that's also kind of how we got to Weakest Link.
Yeah, what is... Sorry, I'm just seeing something in the ratings here. It's called 60 Minutes 2. Which I think the 60 Minutes they aired on Wednesdays. I don't know if they still do that because I
like
don't
the
watch
idea
CBS. But
that they sat down one day and they're like, we want to do more. And they're like,
we've announced.
But we called it 60 Minutes.
The sequel.
We called it 60 Minutes. How can we add more to it?
60 Minutes too. The long-awaited sequel to the show 60 Minutes.
You're a genius.
60 Minutes too.
Like
61 Minutes.
61.
So that's our... That's our life
that's
here.
That's culture. That's what it was.
That's what it was like to be alive.
Still in our houses, not shopping, watching. Not,
yeah, we're terrified. We will not go to the Centralia, Kansas, Brookstone, or the Taco Bell.
Such a shame.
Unless, of course, George Bush wants us to go there. And then I'm going to go there in a brave way.
Yeah, once he tells us.
Talk to us about the episode of Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah, let's talk about Star Trek because there's actually stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Genuinely this week.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like maybe the first truly interesting episode of the show.
Yes. That you could see a very good similar plot on the original series,
yeah.
The Enterprise. Like,
it felt like a pretty good Voyager episode.
Yeah.
Like...
So buckle in because we get right away naked Archer showering.
Yeah. With some incredible CGI work.
And at first I was just like, is this just a fun, silly little joke for the intro? Is that all they're doing here?
Are we doing cold opens like a sitcom?
Right, right. Yeah. Just like life on a Star Trek can get a little silly sometimes.
Life on a Star Trek.
Star Trek on...
That's what I call the ship, but I love it. I call it a Star Trek. Yeah. I mean, they're on, in a lot of ways, they're on a Star Trek.
Yeah, why doesn't anyone ever say that, point that out?
I feel like someone says it at one point. What's his name? I keep wanting to say Zaphod Beeblebrox. That's not his name. Fucking
Zefram Cochran.
Zefram Cochran in the movie First Contact. I think he says, "You must be on some kind of Star Trek." I'm not joking. I think he says it.
I rewatched it. How would I have not been like losing my mind over that? Oh man.
Like, I think he is the first person in Star Trek canon to say the word Star Trek.
Good. He deserves it. And then we get right back to a scene that I feel like they keep drawing on this well of T'Pol doesn't like human food and T'Pol eats weird and like, yeah. I don't know, but it's just to get to another glitch going on in the Enterprise, which is T'Pol just wants a LaCroix and
she
tries
does.
To get some.
And it makes sludge.
And it makes this black sludge. And they just
the other thing is the shower stops working.
Uh-huh.
And the water starts floating everywhere with some of the worst like screensaver ass CGI I've ever seen.
Sure.
But an incredible thing happens where the water's going everywhere, but the shower is still pointing downwards. So the water coming out of the shower is going down and then floating away.
Okay, yes.
And I'm like, I feel like you should have just turned the shower and the scene off and have the CGI water go all over the place.
Yeah, I can.
That's what I would have done if I were effects directing the episode.
There was something funny about the fact that it was just like, oh, I've been in Airbnb with that shower faucet. Yeah. But the, we get to the T'Pol Black Goo scene, and it turns out, in I think one of the first, again, scenes where I'm like, yeah, this is some good Star Trek,
yeah.
is the like trying to figure out what is going on vis-a-vis the like ship that's following them in their wake.
Yeah.
Let's basically like blow up our engines and see if something appears in the exhaust.
Yeah.
And they try that out, and it works.
They start rolling coal in space.
Yeah.
God. To see what's going on back there.
They find the ship. They ask them what's going on. Their ship engine's broken. So they get right to it. Trip has got to go over there, but he's got to do a 3-hour compression first. Decompression.
Yeah.
And this is another thing I just really generally like about this episode, yeah. which is these are aliens that are different and they're, require you to like adapt to their environment.
They
and
are alien, baby.
They are alien.
Their ship is weird inside.
It is weird inside. It has grass growing on the floor and walls.
Yeah.
They give him the like to build up to like how weird it is. The decompression chamber is like scary and he's very nervous.
Yeah,
and
they gas him.
It looks like they're gassing him.
And they're like, a recording keeps going over. That's like, hey, man, breathe normal. Just breathe in the gas. And he's like, it hurts. And like, it'll stop hurting if you keep doing it.
Right.
Which is horrifying.
Yeah, just to be told this and you don't know how trustworthy these aliens are. And yeah. I do remember watching this the first time. I didn't really know where this was going to go as far as like, are these a threat, these aliens? And it definitely plays it that way.
Yeah.
So he gets on and they start doing another thing I like where the camera is like wobbling and the voices are getting slowed down to like actually give us the perception this is disorienting and hard to adapt to.
Yeah, the ship is weird. It's weird in there.
It's strange.
It's got a wacky atmosphere inside
I actually wrote down at first I thought it was a shag carpet, but they do explain it's literally grass.
Later. I mean, it was probably physically a shag carpet.
It probably was physically. I don't know if it was that or turf. It didn't look much like turf, so.
Yeah. They didn't have the real turf yet. Turf back then was like concrete, basically. Oof. Like, it was not. AstroTurf was like not pleasant to feel. It did not feel good.
I didn't
like,
play many sports. So.
The real grass or whatever like came about in like the mid-2000s,
the
I feel.
The real fake grass.
The real fake grass. That's like the nice turf.
So the spaceship. Yeah, it looks very different from any other we've seen. Grass on the floor and walls, just tubes hanging everywhere. Oh, we also see, I just, not really ever explained, but a window aquarium full of eels.
Yeah, that was cool. They're just eels. They're just the ship's eel.
The eel tank.
I mean, listen, Star Trek ships have a fucking whale tank on them.
I know. I liked that it wasn't explained.
It honestly wasn't explained. The aliens also look pretty alien. It's like more prosthetics than usual.
Yeah, we have the trademark ridges, but at least we also have a full like scaly skin.
They got a skin thing. They got like weird eyes. Like there's more. There's like a small. They did some design work on the ship and the aliens to make them feel like they are different.
A greater degree alien than almost any other typical Star Trek alien.
Yes, which is why, of course, you never see them ever again.
Of course.
And why they've never been, like the problem with the prequel thing is that you can't go insert these guys into other scenes unless you're insane.
Mm-hmm.
So we met these aliens like on our first ever trip and then never saw them again.
Well, it's weird. We'll get to it. They have some high-tech stuff.
Yeah.
But they're also a little clueless sometimes, yes. It seems like.
Yes. They're like, oh, our ship broke and broke your ship.
And we don't know how to fix it. And can you, having never ever seen this engine before, fix it for us?
Yeah.
So he...
It's always nice to have a man around.
So he tried... He just insists, I'm going to fix it right now. You're telling me to sleep. I don't care. He tries to fix it. And
yeah.
Despite getting really panicky and feverish, he calls his Archer dad and is like, let me go home. But he orders him to nap. He naps and he wakes up and he's fine.
Yes.
What we get from there is kind of like what this episode is really focused on, which is his relationship with the female, I guess, in this alien species.
We'll get to that.
And they pretty quickly fix the engine. And so we're on to what I was kind of hinting at, their advanced holographic room.
Yeah.
And of course, this is a huge thing in TNG, and I guess in all the 90s episodes series, but it was not a thing in the original Star Trek. Like, it is a very advanced technology and kind of inexplicable that this little mystery aliens have it and never appear again.
Yeah, well, it's fine.
Don't think too hard about it.
No.
And in the hologram room, she shows off her...
Sort of hollow deck.
Hollow deck.
A sort of hologram deck.
We see her home city, and then they get right off to a rowboat for some reason.
She's like, let me show you my boat.
Let me show my boat. Kind of get a little date-like.
Yeah, it becomes very, very date-like on the boat. And she touches his face.
Right.
And it makes a little sparky.
It gets very sensual with the
Very sensual very quickly.
Oh, because I did mention, because she's feeding him jelly water. And I love the little detail. She's just like, we were trying to make you water. This is the best we could do.
Yeah. And she's got a weird bowl full of jelly.
And I'm like, again, they're very advanced, but they have a hard time making liquid water.
Okay. And then, of course, we naturally immediately go to a boat. In a lake of water.
Hologram water. Okay, don't think too hard about it.
Yeah, because I will say also, recently, about, it was like 4 months ago now, me and my partner Jaya were in Japan, and our first day there, it was very hot out, and we stopped at there's like soda machines on like every corner, and we stopped at a soda machine to get some water, and the water that Jaya got was jelly in the bottle, and it was incredible. So I'm imagining, I like experientially... I know what's happened to Trip, which is like jelly water kicks ass.
Yeah.
And I guess it's making him a little horny.
Well, every time she feeds him one of these jelly cubes, she, you know, giving a little jolt it's very also just a sensual way to give somebody jelly cubes. But
oh, yeah. I mean, like, do you not have forks on your planet?
Yeah.
Toothpicks.
Is he so weak he can't feed himself? But, you know, whatever.
Don't think about it.
So it really escalates on the boat when she's like, I want to play a game. And again, it's not like, I shouldn't have given it that come hither attitude, but it's just like, you want to play a game. And
yeah, definitely what I would describe as a game. You know, when you're like, hey, Clayton, do you want to play a game? And you're like, yeah, I love board games. I'm like, awesome. I've got a weird 90s dish full of goo, and you put your hands in the goo, and I put my hands on the goo, and then that means I can see your memories. You know, a game?
Yeah.
That's what a game is like.
A game where we read each other's minds.
Yeah. I was under the impression the game is when you put little pips on a board and you guess what color's there.
Also, by the way, this is how we make each other pregnant.
That's right.
But well, I'm not going to mention that part of it because it's not important. Game.
No, no.
But in this revealing of what's going on in each other's minds, he says about the alien, you find me attractive.
Yeah.
So again, they're and being then very
she,
clear.
And then she says, you like it when other people find you attractive, don't you? Which is like... the horniest fucking thing to say in this scenario.
Yeah, like not even the like you find me attractive, but like,
yeah,
it's definitely communicating. Like I think it's actually doing a pretty good job here of.
Yeah, they weirdly had pretty good chemistry. Like you do forget for a moment that she looked like a fish.
Mm-hmm.
Briefly,
and that she did describe this as a game, but the way it escalates in this way, I kind of like how, again, it's adding to this, they are this different. I can accept that maybe the reason she doesn't say this is they just think it's very typical. Of course you know that sticking your hand in the goo is
sure.
What happens.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is a game in as much as many people refer to a lot of sex as play.
Yeah, yeah. You can get there with that.
Yeah, like. But also, like, she mentioned something about, like, how, like, their species has, like, a sensory thing where you can, like, sense other people's thoughts.
Right.
And she's like, hey, without whatever the fluberty organ that we have, like, how do you know what other people are thinking? And he's like, by their words and actions. And she's like, that's wild.
Yeah, we get by. And I guess you're right. That then, like,
stick your hands in the goop.
Is why she's like, well, do this. And then you'll see what it feels like.
I feel like you don't need the goop if you could do it goopless. It feels like her. She's like, our society doesn't need the goop, but you'd. And it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. They're in a lake full of water. It's fine.
So he's done. He goes back home to his ship, and we get a scene where Malcolm and him just like, it would be so cool if there was a deck with holograms. Mm-hmm. Yes. Imagine what we could get up to on such a hollow deck.
And then Trip immediately was like, yeah, but I don't know how well it would be at making people, which like their immediate first thought is like using it to have sex.
Yes, they definitely
to be fair, you know, TNG doesn't really broach that too much, but Deep Space Nine and Voyager is like, this is for sex. This is for sex. That's all we do with it is for sex. Unless, of course it is.
Unless we want to write Geordi a terrible plot line.
Oh my god. That's not even sex. It's like incel longing.
I know. So we get to, in this conversation, he notices something. Some little bump on his wrist. Yeah, he goes to the doctor, and we get to the, again, the doctor.
My man is here. Phlox. Phlox is here.
We get to the real plot, which is Trip is pregnant.
Yeah. A thing that you find out 26 minutes into the episode or something. Yeah. It's like it gets through a lot of episode before it's like.
Yeah, I was surprised.
I had a memory of it becoming like the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
But no.
They draw at what the title is really about.
Yeah.
Which is that bump is a nipple. And you, sir, are pregnant. Congratulations, as he says.
And then they say some confusing stuff where they're like, oh, all the genetic material is from the mother.
Yes.
And the males carry the baby.
Yeah.
And I was like, what you've just described is, so like male and female, in quotes, right? If we're talking about like sex in nature.
Right.
For reproduction. That's not what that, it can't possibly be that.
Yeah.
Like what you mean is that like anyone can carry the material and that she's the father.
Mm-hmm.
And that like gender clearly sex doesn't even function the way that we think it does with this species.
Mm-hmm.
But the episode instead is like, it makes Tucker start acting like a lady.
I know. And I was like, of course that's where they go. The idea that like there might be some complex thoughts to have about gender is not a thing the show is going to do in.
Well, that will upset John Q. Truck.
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah, so we get the like, don't worry, it's not yours. Basically,
it's like, but like you basically had an experience with like a nicer version of the face hugger from Alien where you're just like gestating this thing.
But I actually really kind of like T'Pol's snarkiness in this. She's like, you were there 3 days and couldn't restrain yourself. She later says, you could have met her holographic parents first. I believe that's what most species do or something.
Oh my God.
And then one thing a diplomat learns is not to stick their fingers where they don't belong. It's like, God, where has this T'Pol been?
Yeah, like she's got some dunks ready to go.
We get him like promising, like, don't tell anyone about this.
Yeah, like he's too embarrassed.
And Archer does a smirk of like, don't worry, I won't tell anyone.
And then he's like, don't tell anyone. Now, where's my muumuu to wear for the rest of this episode?
So he's getting, you know, paranoid about people looking at him weird. And he's getting really hungry.
He snaps at one of the engineers for like someone could hurt their fingers. Yeah. Like in this one little crevasse in the engine room.
For the OSHA violation.
For the OSHA violation.
Which I was like, I did not remember that, but exactly what you were saying. They're like, oh, he's getting emotional.
Yeah, he's got lady hormones, despite him being described by Phlox as the father. It's fine.
It's fine.
Whatever.
And then he's immediately paranoid that T'Pol is the one who's blabbed.
Yes.
He keeps growing nipples, and he finds out that, you know, we might not find these. Oh, we never said the name of them, the Zerillians.
The Zerillians. It was also very confusing is that one of the Zerillians was named Trinal. And like, that's really close to T'Pol. You're in charge of the names.
You can pick them.
It's not like you were out with your friend John and met a guy named Jake and like you're not in control of that. It's like you wrote the name Trinal down. And then you're like, we're in a scene where we have to say Trinal and T'Pol a bunch of times. Great stuff.
They're worried they're not going to find them. You might have to carry this baby to term. And what comes after? Oh, no.
Who knows?
To which he responds, I never had any intention of becoming a working mother. He's really freaking out here about postnatal care and all these things. But again, okay, we keep getting these things about, like, congratulations, you're the first interspecies pregnancy involving a human. Like,
yeah.
On the bright side.
Pretty cool.
So to escalate this in, I think, again, kind of a good way, fun way, they think they find the Zerillians, but yeah. Oops, they actually find a Klingon battlecruiser.
Yeah.
And I'll admit, I liked seeing the old classic Klingon battlecruiser.
Yeah, same.
It was a neat thing where it's like, yeah, we're in the universe now. This is just, you know, what could happen.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Zerillians are in the Klingons' wake. The Klingons are mad at everyone. They're mad at the Enterprise first, so they shoot them. They're mad once they discover the Zerillians are there. Because Archer really thought he could talk to them about this.
Yeah, and they're like, don't call me. Don't ever talk to me. Don't speak to me.
Lose this number.
We're Klingons. We don't want to speak to you.
Yeah.
We barely want to speak to each other.
T'Pol saves the day with some diplomacy.
Yeah.
Call back to the first, you know, she explains, like, did you see the first episode of the series?
Yeah.
It's all about Klingons.
She reminds the Klingons and the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
of the entire plot of the first episode of the show, which I had also, of course, already forgotten.
Because they really didn't care about that plot and did a ton of other things before they got to that plot.
And they're like, all Klingons owe this one man. And he's like, fine, I will do you a favor to not kill you.
But what's great is that that's not still quite enough to get what they want. So Tucker has to get in there and be like, they got a sweet hologram. You might like that.
Yeah.
And
imagine the kind of sex you could be having.
And that's still not enough. So they're like, we have a, you know, there's a kid involved. And they laugh at him and they're like, you got one of their females pregnant. And he shows the prosthetic, which I guess this is maybe only the second time we've seen it. Is it the first time?
They keep it. It's under a muumuu like the whole time.
Yeah. Okay. This is the big reveal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely more alien than I felt like they've been implying.
Yeah. It looks wacky.
But then they laugh at him because he's pregnant. The Klingons understand this.
Uh-huh.
It's very funny that this man is pregnant.
Yeah, every single alien species in the universe has the same conception of gender as human beings from the 1960s, which I think is cool.
Yeah, they make the trade. The Klingons say the debt's repaid, and that's pretty much it. Except, ooh, we had to get the line at the very end.
Well, they had to get the baby out of Tucker.
Oh, sorry. They kind of breeze through that.
It's still removable.
Yeah, no worries.
And it will live just fine.
Yeah.
Thank you. They take it out.
Yeah. Funny thing is I went to the TV tropes for this episode,
yeah.
And they had to point out that this still does the, like, good girls don't get abortions thing, where he is consistently like, I'll only get rid of this thing if it won't hurt it.
Yeah.
They got to have that trope in there.
I have to... again, we are appeasing at the we're at the shrine of John Truk.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot turn him off the show.
No,
like he's at the sharper image. He's buying the little television that they used to, the handheld.
Oh, getting an upgrade.
He's got the handheld television. He's watching it. He's at the Cinnabon
doing his shopping,
to defeat the Taliban. And if there's an abortion, you know, he's gonna switch it to I don't know, football.
If a space Kentuckian dude gets an abortion,
that's right.
He's not going to watch it anymore. But T'Pol has to say, this is the first recorded male being pregnant, which at the time was not true.
But no,
they avoided at least being somewhat declarative by having that early thing about, like, you're the first interspecies pregnancy. Okay.
Yes.
But they got the last line in the show has to be like,
the first pregnant male.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, here's the thing. I feel like this show, out of all the Treks, is, like, so committed to not being, like, have any, like, progressive ideals.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm sort of, like, whatever on it. But it's also, like, I think even at the time, even if it was Next Gen, I think they would have said the same thing.
I think that's
because
very
I think,
fair. Yeah.
I think it's easy to forget the sort of, like, massively sort of queerphobic milieu of the time, and even things that were, like, ostensibly, like, progressive, all it was like, maybe you shouldn't murder gay people.
Yeah.
Like, the idea of a trans person was, like, outside the scope of even what would be considered a thing that you could even talk about outside of, like, a sex worker being killed in SVU or something.
Yeah.
So, like, the idea of them, like, having to explain that on the show, would be just like unheard of.
Yeah.
So I'm not faulting the show for like the atmosphere we all lived in at the time.
Sure.
But also stupid and wrong.
This is what we consider a good episode of the show.
That was the first, much like and, you know what, in almost an identical fashion as Trip was the first ever man to get pregnant. Uh-huh. This was the first ever good episode of Enterprise, in as much as it kind of wasn't. But yeah, I'm saying it because that's what I got. Because
we've had to watch four real bottom of the barrel,
real clunkers. Are like looking forward to this one.
I know. And I mean, you know, it didn't like disappoint me on that respect.
Yeah.
Like it definitely, again, had some things to chew in, but we're back in the wilds, I think, until we know that Shran episode is coming.
We are two episodes from our friend Shran.
All right.
Oh, next week is a weird one. Okay. Oh, baby.
Okay. I like that foreshadowing. Next one's weird.
It's a really, really, really strange one that is directed by LeVar Burton.
Ooh, I love that that was the one way it felt like they would bring in old characters is let them direct an episode. I love this.
In as much like the way they let Bill Shatner direct the movie about finding and killing God. Or finding and arguing with God.
Yeah, yeah.
And singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat Around a Campfire.
Yeah, let actors direct
TV's
episodes at least. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this has been another episode.
See you in another 2 weeks.